Part 2. In this part, you will hear 3 short talks. After each talk, you will hear 6 questions about it. Before each talk begins, you will have time to preview the questions. You will hear each talk and the questions once. You can take notes if you wish. Choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D. Now you will hear the first talk. Look at the questions. Listen to a teacher talking to her colleagues.
Good morning. I'm going to describe to you the water bottle rainbow fish I did with my students. We did this project when we read in class a book called Rainbow Fish, and I wanted them to have an idea of what the character would look like. So, we took a plastic water bottle, removed the label, and then pinched the bottle towards the bottom and twisted it to create a fish shape. The opening is the mouth, and the portion that gets twisted is the back. Then, I ask them to put their index finger through the mouth, hold the bottle against their thumb, and glue small pieces of colored tissue paper, which they had pre-cut, onto the bottle. Tissue paper is very thin, so it's easy to mold it into the small creased areas of the bottle and cover the entire fish with it. You don't want to cover the entire bottle in glue all at once. Just a little section at a time. Starting at the mouth, or you'll end up with a bunch of kids coming to you with bottles glued on their palms. When the fish were finished, we added googly eyes and used sticky foam to add some fins. And then I read to my students The Adventures of a Plastic Bottle, a natural choice with Earth Day coming up next week. This book talks about the life of the water bottle starting with crude oil under the ocean floor and how the bottle became a plastic bottle, was used as a vase, and then recycled into... Well, you'd better discover with your students what becomes of the bottle after it's recycled. So, bottom line, I think this is a great activity, and I'm not blowing my own horn here. For helping your students enhance their motor skills, creativity, visual learning, and decision-making skills. So do incorporate arts and crafts in your curriculum. You'll soon discover how much your students can benefit.
Number 21. Why did the teacher decide to do this project with her students? Number 22. What does the speaker say about the twisted portion of the fish? Number 23. Why does the speaker suggest using tissue paper? Number 24. Why does the speaker advise the listeners to start at the mouth? Number 25. What did the teacher probably want to do for her students? Number 26. What does the speaker mean when she says,
I'm not blowing my own horn?
Now you will hear the second talk. Look at the questions. Listen to a professional talking on the radio.
Thank you, Carol. I'm really, really happy to be back on the podcast. Really glad to speak with you again. Today, I'm going to talk about what is almost a conventional wisdom, that having a pet can benefit the health and well-being of people by elevating their mood and keeping them active. Well, I'm not so sure this is always the case. Well, this idea, known as the pet effect, is widely promoted by the pet products industry, and yes, to an extent, this is true. But the question is, how good is the science behind this all? I started thinking about that while working on a book I wrote on human-animal interactions. I needed to have a chapter talking about the impact of pet ownership on human health. So I looked at published papers, and most of them talked about a positive pet effect. You know, pet owners are more likely to survive after a heart attack or have lower blood pressure, less psychological distress. But there were other papers suggesting that pet owners tend to be more depressed, more likely to suffer a heart attack, or have higher blood pressure. So I did more systematic research and discovered that many family practice doctors prescribe pets for their patients because they believe in the healing power of pets. And that's fine for everybody to believe, but if we're going to make medical claims and have doctors prescribe pets for their patients, that sets a higher bar. Furthermore, pets are expensive. It costs about $10,000 on average to provide for a pet over its lifespan. And then, every year in the USA, about 85,000 people, especially elderly people, are taken to hospital emergency rooms because they trip over their pet and break a leg. And of course, we mustn't forget pet planning. You must have someone tasked with caring for your pet in your absence. Bottom line, maybe we should think twice before getting a pet.
Number 27. What does a speaker probably do for a living? Number 28. What is the conventional wisdom according to the speaker? Number 29. What prompted the speaker to study the validity of the pet effect? Number 30. What is true about the published papers the speaker studied? Number 31. Why does the speaker mention doctors? Number 32. What disadvantage of pet ownership does the speaker not mention? Now you will hear the third talk. Look at the questions. listen to a zookeeper talking to some guests at a zoo.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Zoo on this sunny Saturday morning. I'm Amy, and I'm here to tell you about our snow leopards. The snow leopard is an elusive, solitary cat that you'll find at very high elevations in Asia and Eastern Europe. Its smoky gray color and blurred black markings help the cat blend into its stony mountain habitat. They have a number of other physiological adaptations that render survival out in the harsh, cold environments easier. For example, they have incredibly wide nostrils which allow them to warm the cold, snowy air before it gets into their lungs. And their huge paws have fur on the bottom that gives them traction on the snow and protection from sharp rocks. It is a very exciting time now here in Minnesota Zoo because Tigra, our young female snow leopard, gave birth to two beautiful cubs a month ago. And for the first 2 months, it's important that we remain as hands-off as possible and allow Tigra to form this incredibly strong bond between mother and children. Snow leopards are what we call crepuscular. Now there's a new word. It means that they are most active around dawn and also around twilight and dusk. Out in wild environments, given that sort of movement and the fact that they are solitary creatures, it's very difficult to gauge exactly how many of them are left out in the wild. But the estimated numbers are somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000. Now, if you're interested in learning more about the snow leopard, you can arrange backstage passes to view the behind-the-scenes action at the zoo at a nominal fee. Go online to check availability and make your appointment and stay up to date with the antics of our beautiful newborn cubs on our Cub Cam.
Number 33. What is not true of snow leopards? Number 34. What do we learn about the snow leopard's fur? Number 35. Why do they have different noses from other animals? Number 36. What must zookeepers do with Tigra for the next month? Number 37. Why is it difficult to spot a snow leopard in the wild? Number 38. What must people do to get a backstage pass for the snow leopard? End of part 2.